today on Rocking the Suburbs.
Listener Stephen Routledge talks about his favorite album of 2021.
Well, you know what they say, Patrick.
What's that?
If it's not Scottish, it's crap. And that is probably the worst accent ever. Okay, through the continued magic of the internet, we're able to connect with so many people on our podcast. The show is called Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And as regular listeners will know already, we have certain patrons of the podcast who help support the show, and they come on every so often and they pick a topic, and then sometimes those patrons get really ambitious and then they invite another person to be on at the same time. And Stephen Routledge out there in Scotland, he did that for this episode. So first off, welcome, Stephen.
Hi, Jim, Patrick. Good to be here again, mate. Cheers.
Thank you.
It's as we're recording this, it's what time for you in Scotland right now?
It's 4 p.m.
Okay. So you're doing okay. So it's 11 a.m. here, which for me is still early on a weekend. So you know, I still feel a little bit out of it, but I'm going to count on you to carry the load here. Stephen, would you like to introduce the special guest who you invited?
Yeah, this is the first time I've been ambitious enough to try and get someone else to come on, but I just submitted, you know, just before recently you put in for my, you know, my best of 2021 picks, and in that recording that I sent in, I only selected a song of the year. I didn't select my album of the year. I put a little teaser in just saying, because my album of the year will be revealed once, because fortunately I'm going to be the creator of the album is going to be coming on the pod to talk about it with us, which was quite thrilling. So it's with great pleasure I can say that Andrew Howie is joining us this afternoon to talk about his music. So welcome, Andrew.
Hi, guys. Thanks very much for having me on here. Thanks, Stephen, for asking.
Well, thanks for coming. It's great.
Yeah, great to have you.
Well, thanks, Andrew. So thank you. Let's get right into that then, Stephen. So tell us about the album that you mentioned, and maybe a little bit about what drew you to it, and then of course we want to hear from Andrew to talk about it.
Yeah, I have prepared some notes, some stuff. Yeah, well, it was, as with a lot of my music discoveries, I think it came via Bandcamp, and it was just one of my recommendations. And so I just, whenever you get the weekly email with your recommendations on, and it's, I think it was one of the ones that's on there, so I just clicked on it and play. And sort of the opening track on the album, which the album we're talking about, is called Pale White Branches. And yeah, so the opening track, I follow a fighter, got this kind of like, got this twisty, interesting little guitar riff that just comes in just before the chorus. Kind of got my attention. That's intriguing. That's intriguing. Okay, and then we go into Open Arms, which is the next song, and it just like punches you in the face with this like power pop melody wonderfulness. And I'm like, hello, take my money now.
Come on, let's talk about the weather. Let's get it over with. We both know it's not getting any better. Best to see it as a long neck kiss. Cause laser rota is the reason the spaces are so green. From Kelvin Grove to Bella Houston, and all the nooks and crannies in between.
days dark is in the past now. He wasn't even real. They like to paint us as crazy, but this is no new city.
So I did send my money, and Andrew actually sent me the CD with a little handwritten note in there saying, hope you enjoy the songs, play it loud, which I have been, and I have been. So, which is always was another nice little touch. And then, I submitted one of the songs to back in for my June New Music Picks. I think Madeline was the song I chose back on episode 1159, which is another sort of kind of, quite upbeat and power poppy, so kind of song rocks along quite nicely, and I think you guys, if I remember rightly, quite enjoyed it as well. And at the time, I thought this album might be one that would be my sort of best of at the end of the list, and it was, and ultimately it sat at the top of that list. So it's just a fantastic album. I'm just really keen to sort of hear from Andrew more about his songs and his process and all that sort of stuff, you know.
Yeah, so let me interject here. Andrew, how does that make you feel to hear from a fan like this who recently discovered this music?
Yeah, it's lovely. I think he was one of the first people to find it and buy it. And then you guys were one of the first shows to play a song from it. So that was really, it was really nice for me, really encouraging. And I remember you guys making a few comments after playing Madeline. And that was, yeah, it was lovely to hear. So, Stephen's been really supportive, and I'm really glad the album's connected, with him in the way that I hoped it would when I was making it.
And the fact that Andrew is Scottish, that had no bearing on your selection, right, Stephen?
Not at all. No. When once I listened to it, I realized he was Scottish because his accent clearly comes through on the songs. And yeah, I think I initially described it as like kind of like, and I probably still do describe it as like, well, certainly this album as a sort of cross between like Josh Rouse and Delamitri, kind of, because Delamitri have that kind of, you very much get the Scottishness come through in the vocal as well. And there's some similarity to some of the song styles, I guess, on this album. But when I found out it was like in Stirling, which is like 16 miles away from where I am in Callander, it's like, that was quite, it's like, oh, I can't believe this. How has this happened?
I didn't know you were in Callander, Stephen. I was in Callander the other week. I would have popped in.
All right, yeah, no, I'm here, just up the road. So that was a nice bonus, you know. That was that was a surprise, but
So Andrew, tell our listeners a little bit about how Pale White Branches came together, and for people who aren't familiar with your music, where do you feel this fits in with your overall catalog of work?
Okay, my first piece of music came out in 2000, so I've been putting out music for quite a long time, and I have a bit of a short attention span when it comes to genres. So I've done, you know, it started off as a kind of almost Elliott Smith like double tracked vocal and acoustic guitar thing, the first ever thing I put out. But I've done a lot of kind of left field stuff over the year, but I always kind of circle back to the kind of singer songwriter thing. And I'd done a lot of work as a community music tutor over the last probably 8 or 9 years. And through some of that work, a lot of co-songwriting, a lot of songwriting and projects with different folks. And I had also been writing my own stuff, and I'd kind of reached the point where I knew I had 10, 11 songs that I thought would work really well together. They were all kind of fairly, well, not upbeat, but they kind of had a kind of anthemic thing going on, and I thought these songs will really work well with the band. And to be honest, I really prefer working alone most of the time. I love electronica, I love home recording, and I've got a wee setup here. But I knew this would work well with a band, and I knew I wouldn't be able to do it justice myself from that point of view. So it was a very long process. getting the songs ready, choosing the musicians. That was really important to me, to get the right folks, people that I knew, people that I trusted, people that I would feel comfortable going into a studio with, and I knew that they would happily take guidance from me, but also that I could trust them to come up with much better stuff than I'd ever come up with on my own. And then went into a studio in Glasgow, Glowworm Recording, which is quite a high-end studio, but I knew the guy who ran it, and I'd worked with him before quite a few years ago. From starting the first day of recording to the day of putting the album out into the world was like 3 years, which was much longer than I would usually take. And part of that's COVID. Part of that was just not being able to actually be in the same room at the same time as other people. Part of it was financial, because I was investing quite a lot of my own money in this, and I had to wait for some more to come in. And then, you know, I had to do a bit of home recording, and then, you know, the person I wanted to do backing vocals was moving to Sweden, and I thought, well, I better get her. She borrowed a mic and recorded the backing vocals in a broom cupboard in a flat next door to her, and it was just pulling it all together. So, yeah, it's a long answer to your question, but I hope that gives you a wee bit of background.
I think it's interesting what you're saying there, Andrew, about how the album took quite a long time to put together over a number of years, because to me all the songs seem kind of really like matured, like they've been not, yeah, that they've had the time to kind of rest, and they're not kind of, you know, I'm a big Neil Young fan, and he's very much of the in the moment kind of like just grab it, do it, move on kind of situation, and these songs, they're very well crafted. Mm-hmm. I would say, but also in the audio and sort of the performance production, there's so many nice little touches that are just slotted in. That it's like, yeah, as you said, you've worked with people there, because they're not necessarily things that you would just, if you're just recording a song yourself, you wouldn't necessarily come up with, you know. Yeah. Just think of things like, you know, in Open Arms, I think before it goes into the final chorus, like the snare drops out on the drums and it just goes to like the bass guitar and the kick, and it's, but it really emphasizes it nicely and then comes back in. There's nice little, just a little polish, you know, kind of thing that just elevates things a little bit higher than just the song on its own, you know.
Yeah, I think I'd written the song, and then the song had originally been written for a compilation for a charity called Refuweegee. If you're from Scotland, you'd know that a Weegee is a nickname for someone from Glasgow, so a Glaswegian, a Weegee. And the charity is called Refuweegee, and it's all about welcoming refugees to Scotland. So it was a kind of CD to raise funds for them. So I wrote the song for that, and I did a home recording of it, which was very kind of electro. And then I played it. I played it live quite a few times, both on my own and with other musicians. And then got these guys in the studio, and then thought through it again. I suppose you're right. It did, and that was over a number of years. And another song on there, California, I'd written. I'd studied a master's in songwriting in 2012 to 14. And in the first week of that course, we were essentially locked in a room with another person on the course and said, write a song about this, play it to the rest of the class at the end of the day, and we'll give you a mark, kind of thing. So the second day, I was teamed up with a guy called Alan Kerr, and we wrote California together, and that's the oldest song on the album, but I just knew it would fit in with these ones that were accumulating over the years. And again, I would have played it live several times and worked on it, and there's also the whole, you know, mixing side of it, where you're dropping things in and out, getting feedback from the producer and the engineer, and I think you're right, they definitely did. I like the word mature. We'll go with that.
Well matured.
Over the years. So well matured. Yeah.
Hey, Andrew, I want to ask, this seems like an appropriate time.
Yeah.
Since you mentioned the MA, what is the Jerry Rafferty Scholarship, and how did you win it?
Jerry Rafferty's a musician who, his most famous song, I think, is Baker Street. It's got really famous sax line. You know that. Okay. So, it's hard to know sometimes outside of Scotland what people,
because
he's from, but he's from Paisley, which is a town in Scotland. And it was the very first year of this project, and it was just that I honestly actually don't really know what the connection was with Jerry Rafferty, other than his daughter, Martha Rafferty, was involved in the process of who got the scholarship. Mm. So I think a few of us applied, and I was lucky enough to get it because it basically paid all my tuition fees.
Wow.
For the kind of 18 months I was on it, and I really don't think I would have been able to do it otherwise. So it was a real honor, but I was also practically very helpful as well to win it. So, but yeah, that was the name of it. So there must have been a connection with the guy who runs the course. Who's a guy called he's called Davy Scott. He's in a Scottish band called the Pearl Fishers. Hmm. And there must have been a connection between him and Martha to do with that.
That's very cool and great to hear that that's out there for aspiring musicians and artists. Yeah. I think that's great. And man, Baker Street, as Jim can attest, was on the radio over here in the States, right? I mean, okay. All the time. I got that saxophone solo seared in my gray matter.
Back in the 70s, whenever that came out, it was like probably every hour on the hour for
that's yeah, right. Yeah. They had it on. Yeah, yeah,
absolutely. Came in. It cut right through on cool. those AM speakers, man. That saxophone did it.
Yeah, yeah.
But wasn't he also Steeler's wheel? Wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. He was in Steeler's wheel. Yeah, and it stuck in the middle with you and all that kind of stuff as well. So
yeah, absolutely.
So it was interesting when Andrew said about Paisley, obviously being a town in Scotland. One of the things I think really that maybe your American listeners listening to the album might not necessarily pick up on the fact is you reference Scottish locales an awful lot in your songs. Yeah. Hmm. So you and I, Andrew, would know that Kelvin Grove, Bella Houston, Dunbarton Road, Park Station, Broom Park Drive, Invalusa Bay, these are all real places. Yeah, they're not just like nice names that you've made up.
Yeah. I think you've listed them earlier,
And I mean, even California, although obviously that song isn't about the California that's just outside Falkirk. That would be a very different song, I think, possibly. But it's not quite as sunny as the real thing. But you clearly... You've obviously put a lot in. You're pulling a lot from Scotland into the songs, and I really thought when I listened to the album, the songs seem to fall into sort of two or three different categories. There's the ones that feel like they're very much this is a story observed from outside or pulled from my imagination. Hmm. This is a song of personal experience, and there's some that you could think, well, this could be either or maybe even a bit of both. And I wondered if that is the case. And I had a couple in particular I wanted to maybe ask you about.
Please
as well,
do, yeah. Yeah, please.
Well, because Madeline, the one that we played on the show before, that feels much like that could be an observed song of the story of this girl growing up and going through her life and the problems and that. But then it could be like also could be someone you knew and you kind of dramatized that into song. So yeah, I was just curious whether that was what was the case with that, really.
Yeah, I think it's totally made up, and it's one of those ones. I actually struggle to remember the process of writing it. It's just one of those ones that kind of I was in the habit of sitting down at the start of every day for half an hour or so and just picking up my guitar and just writing. So a lot of those days just kind of blended into each other. Mm-hmm. But at the end of them, I had a bunch of songs, and Madeline was one of them. But some of it's pulled from my own experience. So, like, I had an upbringing where I went to church all the time, and there's a verse in there about communion mm-hmm. glasses, and that was that was a real fear. You're passing this kind of tray of little, tiny little communion glasses, and it's like, if I drop them, it's going to be, you know, there's going to be hell to pay.
Literally. it,
so, you know, pulling little kind of bits of imagery out of that. But no, that one's probably the most kind of fictionalized or just fiction, actually, one. But I've certainly drawn bits and pieces. But when you're talking about place names, I think I was reading there's a big fat orange book called Songwriters on Songwriting, and it's lots of interviews with famous songwriters. And there was a chapter on Jimmy Webb. And I was reading this book, some of these interviews, as a bit of inspiration before I was doing my kind of daily songwriting routine. And it talked about Jimmy Webb's songs, Wichita Lineman. But I kind of sat and I thought, all right, I really like this idea of writing a song from a sense of place. So I thought, well, what is a place that has some kind of emotional resonance for me when I kind of look back? And I came up with, and it was the song Broom Park Drive, and remembering a kind of childhood friendship.
On Broom Park Drive, in the summer of 85, where the crossroads cut through our lives, you gave me a home from home and alliance to call my own, footprints to follow through the great unknown. It was a baptism into the American dream for this middle class kid raised on stateside TV with your jam.
Again, talking about songs maturing, I mean, that's probably the one that took me the longest to write, because I really wanted to get it right because it meant so much to me. But again, I took, when I was doing the kind of community music work, I would go into a kind of songwriting workshop, and I used this idea of a sense of place, and I said to folks there, can you think of a place that really resonates with you in your memory and your history? So Partick Station came out of that. That was a woman I worked with called Colleen Souness, and she talked about when she moved from New Zealand to Glasgow, and not knowing a single person in the whole city, but just having this kind of really positive attitude and walking out under the archway of Partick Station, which is in the west end of Glasgow, and just having this real feeling that I'm going to get to know so many people in this city. So that's where that one came from.
With a crazy boss and a broken heart, I took a one-way ticket alone. With a bruised determination, I fled the castle I still call home. Turning left from Partick Station, with my whole life on my back, exhilarated by the freedom, but daunted by the friends I love.
Yeah, that's really interesting to hear that, because yeah, I mean, I'm glad you picked out Broome Park Drive and Partick Station, because they were the two that I really wanted to mention to you. Because Partick Station, which apart from the fact that, and as a massive fan of the Jayhawks, that really feels like if a Jayhawks had lived in Scotland for a year and wrote a song about it, that might be what it sounded like a little bit, because it's really, I mean, yeah, particularly like the guitar break and stuff like that. It's really got that kind of Jayhawks kind of feel. And yeah, this, such a specific kind of location. Thinking, okay, yeah, well, that kind of feels. It felt too much of it. Yeah, too detailed to be completely fictional. But especially Broome Park Drive, I really love that song. Just not just the music, which is fantastic, but also the kind of sentiment, because it was so specific. I thought this has to be real. This is too niche. This experience of like, oh yeah, met this girl. You know, she was a friend at school from America, and she moved back, and then we kind of fell out. You know, should I get in touch with her again later in life? And maybe actually sometimes things just happen for a season, and that's just fine. And it's just this lovely kind of almost like elegiac sort of kind of music with a sentiment that goes with it of like, yeah, sometimes things are great for a while and then it stops, you know, and it doesn't always have to be some fairy tale ending. It can be real life, you know. It's like, it felt like a real life song that kind of just, yeah, it was, I just really sort of affected me in some, you know, quite a deep way, just the way you sort of crafted that together so well, I thought, you know. And
well, thank you. That's really kind. I think it's one of those ones that I couldn't have told you what the last verse or the conclusion I was going to come to would have been unless I'd written it. It was the kind of process of doing it and then kind of thinking, oh, right, okay, this is what the song is trying to teach me, I suppose, without wanting to get too pretentious about it, you know. But it's the process of making the writing the song that kind of leads me to figuring out what the song is showing me, I suppose. So,
well, I have a songwriting question real quick. So, on that topic. Andrew, I know you have a background in ambient music, writing ambient music a lot, right?
Yes.
So I've always wondered this as a person who is not a songwriter. How do you know when a piece of music should have lyrics and when it should be instrumental?
That's a good question. I think if I'm sitting down with my acoustic guitar, it's almost 99.9% that's going to be me writing a song, because I don't really do instrumental acoustic stuff, I suppose. I suppose it's my intent going into it. Like if I'm going to do a bit of electronic or ambient stuff, I'll kind of know that's not what I'm doing.
Okay.
So I might not know how it's all going to sound. I won't know how it's all going to sound, but I'll most of the time know it's not going to have lyrics in it. I think I get fed up listening to my voice as well. Probably a sentiment shared by some people listening to this. But I suppose I just listen to a lot of stuff. I'm a massive fan of Brian Eno and his ambient stuff. I've always loved Moby's music as well, but he's done a lot of, he's kind of does ambient versions of his albums, which I really like as well. That kind of reworking of things. So yeah, I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, it does. So what you're saying is you sort of start with that intent from the beginning, and that impacts how you even approach composition, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think I know when it's a song and I know when it's going to be an instrumental thing. I've been working on a lot of instrumental guitar music recently, but that's been my electric guitar going through a pile of pedals. And it's a challenge. I suppose I'm challenging myself. I don't feel like I don't feel like I can call myself a guitar player, because I know of and know so many people who play guitar who are so much better than me. I feel like I'm just kind of pretending most of the time, but I'm doing a lot of looping and adding in a lot of sounds but there's no microphone and I'm recording it all as I go, but there's no microphone there, so it's never going to be a kind of a vocal thing.
I think that's really, really interesting and kind of is a good segue into what I was going to ask about too, is talk a little bit about your solo guitar loops. You made two records that I found really interesting. You can find them on Bandcamp, folks, along with all the early stuff that Andrew mentioned, you know, with it that he put out under, I'm sorry, Andrew, was it Collamator? Is that how you say that?
Yeah, that's a common problem. And the reason one of the main reasons I dropped it is because it was on that first single I talked about a while ago. It was a thick 7-inch single, and it was played by John Peel on his Radio 1 show.
Wow.
And he struggled. He was like, is this Collamator? You know, and he couldn't get it. I should have known then. I thought, right, that was a really stupid mistake to make. So, and it's been pronounced in lots of ways. So no, it's my fault. It's no one else's.
But it's a sort of a jokey name, right? Collamator, like calamity, yeah. And amateur, right?
Well, thank you. I don't, if you've picked up on that yourself, I really appreciate it, because no one got that.
I figured it out, but
yeah, all that stuff is on Bandcamp as well, but also these two solo guitar loops. So can you talk a little bit about, how, you know, you decided to record that, and also what it was like to do it? Because I am a huge fan of the American primitive guitarist John Fahey, and I remember he said once that when he practiced, he always tried to practice for at least an hour, because it took him an hour or so to kind of clear out all the stuff that was somehow in his subconscious or his hands, you know, familiar riffs. And after an hour, he would get to a place where he was actually creating something that he felt like was new. So I'm fascinated by the fact that you sort of, you know, did this on an improvisational basis.
Yeah, I suppose it was just a brand new thing for me. I just wanted to challenge myself. And I'd been listening to a lot of music by Noveller, which is Sarah Lipstate, and solo guitar project. And I'd seen her play in Glasgow. She's from the States. And it's a lot of this. She's got all these pedals and does it, a lot of the looping. But it's really kind of soundscapey, movie themes, very kind of Twin Peaks inspired kind of stuff. And I thought I would just... I bought a new looping pedal. And I just thought, I'm just going to take these cables, plug them in, press record in Pro Tools, and I'm just going to play. I might not have made it to an hour, so I'm not quite a John Fahey standard, but I just tried to sit there and play, and most of it is improvised. Some of it is, certainly I've come up with it, and then I've tweaked it and kind of gone over it and over it, and then I've kind of said, right, that's that, I'll leave that alone. So I'm not sure if that would come under the standard of definition or just quickly arranged. But it was a challenge to myself. And then I did this for a few weeks, I think, on, you know, 3 or 4 days a week. And that's almost the easy part. I mean, when I listened back a few weeks later, I thought, oh, actually, this stuff isn't entirely awful. And I did as little editing as I could, because I wanted it to be quite pure in that respect, I suppose. But then if I've got literally kind of hours of material sitting down and listening to it, and cutting it up and taking this bit, and I did those two, and then I decided to keep doing it, but under a different moniker, which is Slow the Tape, which is hopefully easier to pronounce than Collamator.
Yeah.
So that's I've now got a kind of separate Bandcamp page where I have that stuff, and I personally get a lot of fulfillment out of doing that, and some people seem to enjoy it. So, but it's pretty left. Some of it's pretty left field and kind of wonky and distorted. But I'm really inspired by like Noveller, My Bloody Valentine, Bill Frisell, and there was a couple of others. It's a band called Earth from Washington State, who have some old connection to Nirvana, I think, but they do a lot of kind of droney, kind of just the same thing going on. So it's very, I feel like with this is Pale White Branches, this was me trying to be as commercial as I could be without selling my soul. I suppose I knew there's that side of me that really loves songwriting. I love people like Amy Mann and Neil Young, the aforementioned Neil Young, and folks like that, and I have that singer-songwriter side, but and that was a kind of culmination of a few years worth of that, but I love the kind of ambient guitar stuff as well.
I really, really enjoy it. It was really good for me. I just love the way those tones crossed over it to each other and meshed and came in and out. It just creates all kinds of very interesting textures. So.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
I know once I got Pale White Branches and then I was on the sort of the mailing list for your label, and then the next thing I think that came out was Slow the Tape thing. I thought, oh, okay, I'll check this out. Okay, this is very different. This wasn't what I was expecting. But even going back to some of the earlier albums that you've done, like the very much with that electronica kind of stuff. It's very, very different, and it's kind of annoying in a way that you can sort of flip between these like styles so evidently, you know.
Well, you know, Andrew, it's very interesting because Stephen's taste is so eclectic. I mean, we've been so lucky to have Stephen as a member of our community for a while now, and you never know what he's going to come up with when he does his new music picks. I mean, it's all over the place. He likes a lot of heavy music, a lot of acoustic stuff, and obviously one of the world's biggest Teenage Fan Club fans. And so it's very interesting to have him surface your music too. And I just, you know, means a lot to me to have him, right. Pick this as album of the year. I think it's such a cool story.
So, all right. Stephen, any last questions?
No, I think we've covered everything I wanted to sort of kind of ask Andrew there that I sort of noted down and obviously and more besides, and it's been great. I think the only kind of last thing I would say is I just implore the listeners to give the album a listen, because I know, knowing what the tastes of our community is like, many of them will really enjoy it. You know, this is not one of my sort of weird ones that only Patrick likes, you know. So, you know, if you like indie rock, you'll like this. Yeah. If you like Americana, you'll like this. You know, if you like classic rock, you'll like this. It's not classic rock, but you know what I mean? It's not going to scare those sort of people away, you know. And if you just like good songwriting and singer-songwriter stuff, you'll like it as well. So, you know, if any of those ticks your sort of on your list, then give it a listen, because I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah. If you like Baker Street, for example, I think you might.
Yeah. There you go.
Like this album.
There's that connection. Yep.
Yeah. No saxophone on it, I'm afraid.
No.
Next time. I really appreciate, Stephen, I really appreciate you putting the spotlight on it and bringing it to the attention of Jim and Patrick as well. And thank you for playing the music on your show. And thank you for listening so carefully and intently, because so often music is just in the background. And that's, we're all guilty of that, just having it on and not perhaps listening as carefully as we should. But I really appreciate the attention. And I think, you know, people listening won't get this, but I think you're also wearing the same shirt as me.
It's certainly close.
So yeah. We're linked on many levels.
Yeah, I think you guys need to meet halfway and bring your guitars, and we'll see what happens.
You both look very dressed for Scotland in the winter.
Yeah, well, it is sort of sleety and snowy out there at the moment, and so you got no t-shirts here, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is the best way for people in the U.S. to get the album Pale White Branches?
Well, it's on all the streaming platforms worldwide. Bandcamp is obviously, you know, the greatest place, best place to get it.
Yep.
In terms of, I suppose, in terms of me seeing who's connected with it, financially, obviously, as well. And if you want the physical copy, that's actually the only place you can get it as well. But it's certainly on all the other streaming and digital platforms as well. So it's easy for folks to get hold of.
Okay. So, but for physical copies, which we like to promote, go to Bandcamp, right?
Yeah, yep. Bandcamp, definitely Bandcamp. Yeah.
Fine. Andrew Howie, Pale White Branches, order it there. Okay. Thanks very much, Andrew, for being on.
Thank you so much. Yes. Really nice to meet you both.
Stephen, you too. As well,
so thank
Appreciate
you.
Your time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. And thanks again to Stephen, not only for supporting the show, but for setting this up. This is
absolutely
a little extra work.
That's a pleasure.
And we really appreciate it.
Well, a couple of emails is hardly helpful strenuous.
It worked out great. So,
yeah, totally.
Okay. If anyone would like to contact the show, you can call, leave a message. We'll play your message on an upcoming episode. The U.S. number is 612-440.
1984.
There you go. Or you can email us, rock@suburbspod.com, or find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram at suburbspod. And Andrew, do you do like social media at all? Can people follow you there?
Yeah, Twitter, which is unfortunately still under the name of Calamature.
So spell that for people.
It's the word amateur on its own, and then C-A-L before that. So C-A-L amateur, Cal amateur.
Okay.
Or Calamature, however you want to pronounce it.
All right. On Twitter. All right. So thanks very much. Okay. Let's get out of here. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
I've been Stephen Routledge.
And with us has been
Andrew Heavy.
Thanks, Andrew. And we'll talk to you all later. But I could see how it could become sort of an Own Eaters kind of thing if you've seen thing you do, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yes. Yeah,